everyone's time. So, okay. I'm going to repeat again. Thank you, Barry Mueller. And
thank you for coming.
And friends, and this wonderful, magical palace that we're in. Quite an amazing, nice place. I'm very happy to bring the tour of Shirim from place to place in Givat Shmuel. We hit the new side, we hit the old side, we hit the newer old side.
Yeah,
here we are.
Yeah, I like
we're that. The new part of the old side. Yeah, something like that. So here we are in the last leg of the 3 weeks, the third week. And appropriately, it's time to come to some sort of tachlis when it comes to the topic we started a couple weeks ago, which was change. We started talking about the need to hold back from creating creating a definition for ourselves, because that could potentially limit our ability to see ourselves being someone different. And the whole point of change is to become someone different. We then gravitated towards looking inwards, being silent, restraining from action and from building and from defining ourselves once more, because there is already perhaps a definition created for us by God. There is perhaps more definition in our lives than we knew, more authentic, more genuine definition, and many times our attempts to define ourselves using our own intellect and our own capacity to create structure in our life is futile, because it can also end up with the wrong definition. And that's why turning towards the Torah, turning towards the Word of God, and being silent, which we discussed last week, can play a key role in our change. And then the third step, which I want to talk about tonight, is the exact opposite. Which is moving outwards. How being proactive, how specifically not being silent, but being active and getting up and doing something, can be the final step towards real, authentic, successful change. And when it comes to taking action and getting up and doing something, there is a word that we have for that in Jewish literature, and that word is zrizut, or zrizus, to be quick. This is something that I can assume we've all heard of this concept before. There are several classic sources. The first two sources in the source sheet point to probably the most famous areas where the concept of zrizus comes up in the Torah. The first one is regarding Avram Avinu. And it says in the first source, Vayikra Parsha Shmini, Parsha Shmini Tazria, this is actually referring to Tazria, which is talking about the mitzvah of Bris Milah. So the Medrash on the mitzvah of Bris Milah discusses, is there an extra source sheet? Or here's, these are in two pages. Uvayom Hashmini Yidmol Besar Alaso, talking about circumcision, Bris Milah. Uvayom Velo Balayla. The Medrash Paskins, that the Bris Milah should be done for a baby on the eighth day of its life, his life, in the daytime and not at nighttime. Lerabos Shekol Hanimolim Lo Yu Ela Bayom. That it should be during the day. Uvayom Hashmini. And what is it referring to when it says on the eighth day? Malamed Shekol Hayom Kasher Lemilah. The whole entire day is kasher for a Bris Milah. It happens to be that, I know in Chutz La'aretz, specifically America, it's always a morning gig. It's always done in the morning. There are afternoon Bris Milahs that go on here. There are people that specifically wait so that the Seudas Mitzvah can be done with meat, fleishiks, and it's kind of weird to have a schnitzel breakfast, so they do it in the afternoon. I also am quite fine with that. But here is the source for being able to do a Bris Milah in the afternoon. The whole day, it says Bayom, any part of the day is kosher. Ella, but why do people like to do it in the mornings and go for the bagel and lox gig? Shezrizin makdim le mitzvos. When you have a mitzvah, and you could do it at 7 a.m. or at 7 p.m., do it at 7 a.m. because there's this concept of Zerizin Makdimin L'mitzvos. How do we know that this is a valid idea in the Torah? Because, as it says, Vayashkem Avraham, that Avraham got up. Now, Lahashkim isn't just to get up, that's Vayakam, but it means he got up earlier. He rose with passion and even set his alarm earlier than he needed to. There was a feeling of urgency to do something as quickly as possible. Now, this is actually a very defining characteristic of Avraham. There are several different stories in Avraham's life that we read about in the Torah where he's running all over the place, where he's getting up early. Some of them are even for things that an average person would be running the other way or staying in bed for a long time. For example, if you're 90 years old and God asks you to circumcise yourself, that's an example of something where I may wake up late that morning. Or where God says, I love you very much, now murder your sons. That's an example of something where I may delay slightly or forever, right? But in both of those instances, we hear of Avraham waking up early, going out of his way to do it as soon as possible without delay. Perhaps the most famous example of him doing something urgently, quickly, because the Torah, it literally floods the entire story with the speed in which Avraham was doing things, was when the three guests, i.e. angels, came to visit him. Another time where Avraham had just gone through a delicate surgery, and instead of taking it easy, he ran around, and it says, Vayimaher, he was running, he got the food, he told Sarah to run to get the food, he told Ishmael to get the water. Everyone was running around, it was a frenzy. You have to look in the psukim, I should have brought the source. This was a defining characteristic of Avraham, running. Fast, fast, fast. And it's appropriate that the concept of Zerizin Makdimin L'mitzvos comes from Avraham. But is speed really the point here? Now, in the context of this mitzvah, it's not necessarily to do it fast, but to do it without delay. Do you see the difference? It's not necessarily the speed in which you are performing the mitzvah. It is mostly shortening the gap between the time that the opportunity presents itself and the time that you are already involved in the mitzvah to be zero. When the opportunity arises, do it. That distinction is crucial in understanding Zerizus, and I'll elaborate on that in a minute. There's a second source, which is a famous Gemara, which is actually, I believe, a Tosefta, quoted in the Gemara, that is the basis upon which a very famous Musar Sefer, perhaps the most famous, was written, the Sefer called The Path of the Just, Misilat Yesharim, which is based on a teaching of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. And it says, in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Chaf Amud Beis, although it's said in several different places in Torah Shebaal Peh, Amar Pinchas ben Yair, Torah mevia lidei zehirus. Torah brings you to the value, to the midah of zehirus, which means cautiousness, carefulness. Zehirus mevia lidei zrizus. Being careful leads you to the midah of zrizus, of zealousness, being quick. And then there's this whole long pathway, zrizus to nikias, of being clean, particular. Nikias to precious, separation, precious to tahara, purity, to chasidus, piety, to kedusha, holiness, to anava, humility, anava to yiras chet to kedusha, again, to chasidus, to ruach hakodesh, and ruach hakodesh to tchias hameisim, which is not something we're necessarily in the ballpark of. I think that was God saying, never underestimate yourself. You can do it. Tchias HaMeisim, what are you limiting yourself? It's the whole point of the shir. But there's an interesting ladder, and as you may have seen with Masilat Yesharim, he goes into particular every single midah, and he also goes into some sort of depth on why one necessarily precedes the other, why one would necessarily lead you to the other. But this is an important point that I want to focus on, and this will help us understand the rest of the topic. Zehirus is cautiousness. What is in your mind the image of someone who is being cautious?
Someone who is slowly.
Slowly. Someone who is taking their time to figure it out. Someone who is researching on Google over and over before they decide what restaurants, what vacation, right? It's sitting. It's not doing. The cautious guy is the guy who is not acting. And of all of these different things, you know, I could probably draw an association pretty clearly between chassidus, piety, being extra pious, and kedusha, and being holy. I think there's a clear line from point A to point B there. There's one that sticks out. Being extra cautious leads you to being extra zealous. I can't figure that one out. You want to take a stab at it?
I just have an idea.
Yeah.
Maybe you can source, but to me, what's coming into my mind, sometimes when you communicate with someone, or at least listening to someone, it leads to have a quicker understanding, quicker conversation. And I don't know, for me, if we talk about cautious and zuzit, which is quick. A conversation could be a lot quicker when you're cautious, when you're patient, when you take, try to understand the other side. I don't know, but it's when it comes to communication.
It could be. I think one of these quickest paths to knowledge, to knowing what to do or how to do something, is to first remove yourself and apply, right? Listening skills. Let's take in as much information. The problem is that the characteristic, the mida, as a value of taking in, of being cautious and careful, breeds inaction. It builds upon itself of, let me learn more, let me be more careful, let me investigate all possible angles. Maybe there's something I'm forgetting, right? And I'm not necessarily talking about practically, but more the value of cautiousness, of being careful, does not automatically bring one to be, to have the value of being zealous, of being quick. Here's some more of the alphabet. We have places to put it. Oh, Barry's getting it.
Okay.
That is the problem that I come up with regarding this. And that's why we need to perhaps... Sorry. That's why it's extremely important to make sure we have the right definition of zrizus. Because again, if we talk about speed, and that's why I looked to this in the beginning.
Source
sheets. These are two pages, not one. That's two pages. Two pages. That's why. That's why if we talk about speed, then this question is still a very good question. How does someone who is slow turn into someone who is fast? How does that happen naturally? The way that Rav Pinchas Ben Yair assumes it does. So maybe we need to define it differently, not in a matter of speed in terms of action, but in the matter of purpose. And this is a word, the million-dollar word, when it comes to zrizus that I'm about to say. And this will be the focus of this entire shiur for the rest of the shiur. It is not a matter of speed, it's a matter of clarity. When I am clear on what it is I need to be doing, by definition, there is nothing else that I would do at that point. If there is no doubt in my mind of what decision to make, A or B, and I know the decision is A, then there is nothing between me and A. And naturally, I will gravitate towards A. And all the more so, I will push myself. I will run quickly towards A because my choice is very clear. Now, cautiousness is a mida which dictates the need to find clarity. The need to understand as best as possible, the need to stay away from something that could be bad for me, and the need to understand what is good for me. Being cautious. Not making a mistake in judgment. if I have mastered the mita of being cautious, I have by definition created for myself a situation where I have clarity, where I can then move directly towards my goal. I've analyzed the options, I've decided, I've figured out, I've determined that this is my best option. Now let's go. Zeresis is building off of an understanding of clarity, of purpose. That is why those that discuss the Mita of Zeresis based on this teaching of Rav Pinchas ben Yair and in their own Sfarim discuss it as a major, major foundation. Not just a nice thing to have. Some people are fast, some people are slow. If you're fast, then you're good. But it is a foundation of Avodas Hashem. It is something that you need and without which you're going to be struggling in almost every area you can imagine. Look at source number 3, the Orchos Tzadikim Shar HaZeresis. Again, one of the more fundamental Moser Sfarim talking about different mitos. And when he talks about Zeresis, he first quotes the Chazal from source number 2 of Rav Pinchas ben Yair, talking about Zeresis Mevila de, sorry, Zehiris Mevila de Zeresis. He says, Kama gadol koach HaZeresis. Look how unbelievably powerful, how big, how huge the koach of Zeresis is. She mevia ledei hamidos halalu. Look how many other amazing midos, chasidus, kedusha, ruach hakodesh, tchias hamesim, are all based on this idea of Zeresis. Lachain, yehei adam zahir v'zaris l'chol hamitzvos. What's interesting is, which is what enabled me to see that the point that I just made may have some footing here, that when he mentions Zeresis, he mentions Zahir before it also. What does it mean? He's talking about Shar Zeresis, and then he says, everyone should be Zahir and Zaris. I thought you were saying how amazing Zeresis is. Why you add the Zahir part? Well, because really they're actually one and the same. The idea of Zeresis is that you've achieved clarity and now you are ready to act. You are ready to move towards your goal. La Rutz El HaSefer, La Shkim V'La Hariv. To go towards truth, to get up early in the morning when you have purpose in mind, and to stay late at night, he's referring obviously to the study of Torah. A little later on in this teaching, he says, Midas HaZeresis hi tachshit lechol hamidos. It is like a piece of jewelry. It is what makes all of the other midos that we have beautiful. It's literally like a turbocharge to everything we do. V'hi mitakenet kulam. It perfects. It fixes everything that we do. If we do everything with this mita of purpose, of clarity, of action, then it makes everything else that we do more beautiful. Klalan shel davar. Again, a little further down in this teaching. Yivdok adam ba'atzmo. Ezo avera hu ragilba. V'yimahir la'asos gedarim lihizar v'lishamet me'osa avera. Listen to how he illustrates the way Zeresis should be used as a general rule. He says, Klolo shel davar. And understand how he chose this angle. Check, do an internal check. Which areas of our character we kind of tend to mess up in a lot. And quickly do what? Create boundaries and limitations to be careful and to protect ourselves from messing up. Now, again, take video of the guy that, according to the Orchos Tzadikim, is doing Zeresis. And what is he doing? I'll show you what he's doing. He's sitting like this. Right? Because what the Orchos Tzadikim said to do, if you have Zeresis as a general rule, is do a little self-evaluation, figure out what you're not so good at, and put some gedarim in place to make sure you're not going to go there anymore. Well, that doesn't take a whole lot of action. He actually starts the idea of Zeresis by not doing anything. So it's clear to him that Zeresis doesn't have a lot to do with your speed in terms of your body movement. The way we're picturing Avram Avinu, when he's running around, zipping, setting alarms, that's maybe the symptom of Zeresis. Someone who has Zeresis may do something faster if you clock them. But that's not what the midah is. The midah is having clarity. And acting based on clarity, which means there is direct association between what I know I should be doing and me doing it, and nothing in between. How is that manifesting itself in this example, according to Ochot Tzadikim? If I know something is bad for me, I stay away from it. I don't get close to it. I don't get into this gray area. I create a situation where it is removed from me because I have clarity that it is not good for my life. On a very basic and Olam Hazeh level, if I know that candy is bad for me, I shall not have a candy drawer in my kitchen. For I will eat candy eventually, even as I'm opening the fruit by the foot, shout out to 1990s America. Even though I know that as I'm opening, this is not a good thing, but it's just so long and it's so much fun. And there's a funny joke in the wrapper, right? Not good. What is happening in that situation with the fruit by the foot? I am completely severing the relationship between what my mind knows is good or not good for me and what my actions are doing. There's literally a disconnect. There is a complete detachment from my clarity and my action. And that is the opposite of Zrizus. Zrizus is when my clarity enables me to act swiftly and directly. So I remove junk from my junk drawer. I fill it with kale or something like that. Hearts of palm, I'm not sure. Watermelon, exactly. In that way, there is a complete direct relationship between my clarity of thought and my action. He continues, Gam yivdog atzmo be'ez a mitzvah hu rafui. He should also check, do internal check on what mitzvos he's really good at. What mitzvos he's really weak at. There is both things that he does wrong that he needs to stay away from, and there are also good things that he doesn't do so well that he needs to improve on. Kagon adam batlan yavin mitchila shehabitul ba mitvarm betalim. If I'm lazy, or if I end up goofing off and YouTubing out the rest of the night, then I need to figure out how to get myself back to the right place where I'm taking care of the things that I need to be doing. If I have set in my routine, says the Ruach HaTzadikim, I'm translating or paraphrasing, if there are things in my daily routine that are waste of time, that are counterproductive, and they lead me to miss responsibilities, whether they're spiritual or even not so. And by the way, the Ruach HaTzadikim, I don't quote it here, it says, Zrizus as a midah should apply to our jobs. It should apply to our free time. We shouldn't just be doing things that are not connected to clarity and to purpose. That is not something that a Jew should do. Whenever we do something, even if it's having fun, there should be a purpose to it. There should be clarity of this is what I should be doing right now and not something else. Even if it's going to a movie, there is something productive with spending free time with friends, with relaxing. There has to be clarity there as well. The Mesilas Yesharim further explains this idea in source number 4, and he says, Achar azihiris yavo hazrizus. Why? Ki azihiris sovev al halo ta'aseh, vazrizus al ha'aseh. He kind of calls them mirrors of each other. One is the holding back and one is the doing. As if they're basically the same element at play, but one is used in the form of moving inwards, and one is in the form of moving outwards. Again, this is a similar concept to what the Ruach HaTzadikim mentioned. The Ruach HaTzadikim basically said, Zehirus and Zrizus are kind of the same midah, and you could use that characteristic to pull back, like to remove yourself from Averus, or to move forward to improve on our mitzvos. Right? Behainu sur me rabba asei tov. He quotes the famous pasuk in Tehillim. V'inyano shal azrizus mevor, shehu ha-hagdama le-mitzvos la-shlamas inyanam. It is the hagdama. Again, he quotes, this is literally the prelude to all mitzvos and to completing all of them for completion in Avodas Hashem. U'chaleshon azeh amran in psachim zrizim akdim in le-mitzvos. Which we saw in source number one in the Medrash. Vezeki kemosh tzarch pikchus gadol v'hashkafa rava linatzel mimokshei hayetzer limalit min harasha lo yishlo banu lezar ma'aseinu ken tzarch pikchus gadol v'hashkafa lechoz v'mitzvah zazachos v'm v'lo hota abdanu v'menu. He basically says two sides of the same coin. We need a lot of strength to push ourselves away to abstain from the bad stuff in the world. So too, we need a lot of energy and a lot of chizuk to be able to push ourselves forward towards the things that are good for us in the world. Now, what's interesting about that is you would think that if there's something I know that's good for me, then I would naturally gravitate towards it. But what he's saying is that's not obvious. And that's actually almost never the case, that there's a natural gravitation. There's always something pulling you away. And therefore, it needs to be worked on and improved. And he says, moving forward, v'hini anachnu roim b'inyan neinu. Sorry, roim b'einenu. We see with our own eyes. It's amazing how practical the Messias Hasharim was in the 1600s. How it sounds like he's talking to us today. We see with our own eyes. Kama v'chama pamim. So many times, all over the place, every day, every week. Shekfar libo shel ha'adam yodea chovaso. We go through our day, and if you ask us at any point in the day, what's your purpose in the world? We'll say, you know, to do mitzvos and to listen to God, right? That's what we need to do in this world. We're here to be good to others and to follow the Torah. We know that. It's clear. Day and night, you ask us, we'll give you the right answer 10 out of 10 times. Ve'af al pikein, yinichehu. We let it go. Lo michisaron hakara sachova hi. It's not because we don't recognize what we're supposed to do, but lo lishum ta'am acher. It's not even for any other reason. Elo v'bnei shekvedus ha'atzala miskaberes alav. Heaviness of laziness, of lack of action, of this detachment from what we know is right inside, and that direct line between that knowledge, that clarity, and our actions. V'harehu omer, ochel kima, I'll eat a little, o ishan kima, I'll just take a nap and then I'll go. O kasha elai, latzeis mbesi, it's hard to get up and go, and I have to plan, and I have to think, and I have to coordinate. P'shat zies ketuonatzi, I'm already in my pajamas. Ah, Marv, right? A darn Marv. Marv and pajamas are the worst enemies. Echachal v'shena, how am I going to get up and just put pants on? That seems like the hardest possible thing to do at this moment. Chama azav olam, it's so hot. Hakara rabba o agashamim, it's so cold. It's so rainy. Even though I'd be in a car for most of the time anyways. V'chol sharam and all the excuses and the rants that the people that delay in their lives are full of. And what he's referring to is the average person. Uvein kach, and either way, no matter what, Torah munachas, the book stays closed. Va'avodah mevuteles, and the job doesn't get done. Va'adam ozei vesparo, and we're somewhere else. And it's this oxymoron of life where we know exactly what we're supposed to be doing and it still doesn't get done. And we kick ourselves, and when we're reminded of it, whether it's throughout the year or it suddenly all jumps back into our minds in Elul and Tishrei, which it tends to do, which you're like, how did I just goof off for a whole entire year? How did that happen? Where it's so clear to me now, I'm standing here and the singing is nice and I'm reading it and it all makes sense and it's real and I knew it all along. I'm going to nail it this year. And it's like, fast forward 353 days and you're like, how did I goof off for a whole year? How did I do it? And that's where Zeresis comes in, where there needs to be this clarity of purpose, where we're allowed to see what is needed of us and to do it. And where does that come from? How do we understand how to make that leap from knowing and then doing? And the answer really is source number 6. And I'm going to come back to source number 5. It's very important. But source number 6. One of the most amazing teachings, way ahead of any psychology literature, centuries ahead, and so spot on how we are supposed to approach them, and it seems so simple, and yet it's so complex. The Sefer Achinuch, which is a Sefer dedicated to going through every parsha in the Torah and pointing out where the mitzvot are and discussing a brief explanation of the mitzvah, where it comes from, what it's about, what you're supposed to do. By the way, highly encouraged, and I heard this from a very big gadol who's not in this world anymore, but I heard it from his mouth, that if you're ever looking for something to learn on your free time, you only have a few minutes, whether it's each day or each week, and you don't know what it is, and a lot of learning opportunities seem too big for you to take on for a few minutes or here and there by yourself, Sefer Achinuch. It's a mitzvah. It's not such a difficult Hebrew. It's, where does the mitzvah show up in the Torah? What is it about? Sometimes it's only a little paragraph. And you could literally go through every mitzvah in the Torah, and you could say to yourself, I go through every mitzvah in the Torah. It's an amazing thing to do. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein told that to me, to do that. Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Source number 6. One of the weirdest mitzvahs you've probably never heard of. The mitzvah that on Pesach, when you have the Karban Pesach, which unfortunately we're only talking about in the realm of theory, you must eat it without breaking any bone in the animal. No bones shall break. It has to be a whole animal, which is why it has to be the big shawarma spit. It's roasting. You can't cut it up in pieces, put it in an oven. You have to eat it without breaking any bones. It's kind of a weird mitzvah where God has culinary tips for how we should be eating something. Not just it needs to be kosher, but it should be eaten in a particular way. And the Sefer Chinuch goes on a rant. He rants. And sometimes he digresses and goes off topic when there's something important to say. And it's like, he says, this is a weird one, guys. This is a strange one. What is God doing here? I get it, the Karban Pesach thing. It was the Egyptian god. There was a lot of symbolism involved. I get it, very deep. What about the bones thing? I don't get that part. And he says, V'al tachshov b'ni l'tfos al dvarai v'lomar. Don't ask the question that we're all thinking of, which is, I get it, at the time of the Karban Pesach, they roasted the goat whole. So when we eat our Karban Pesach, we can't break a bone. Why are we doing this crazy imagery symbolism thing just so that we remember the way the Karban looked when it was made back then in Egypt in the first time? It seems like it's a bit too many steps of thinking and imagining. It seems kind of like a stretch. How about we just eat a Karban Pesach and we'll remember the whole story and maybe we'll have a picture book and we could look at it. Why do you need to go so far as to say the way that you eat it and if you crack a bone while you're eating it, you already messed up? Isn't it enough to just do one thing and that kind of complete the picture for us? And we'll fill in the rest of the story. This isn't some deep, crazy thing. This is simply we want to draw some symbolism here to illustrate. This is something simple. You know he's going on a rant when he calls you Bini, my son, and my child. If you have something going on in your head, you're able to listen up a little. I'll teach you a word or two. It was the original time where someone said, I will drop some knowledge on y'all. Ki ha'adam nifal kefi pe'ulosav. man is drawn to act through his actions. Whoa. He's saying that our actions influence our actions. V'libo v'chol machshavosav tamid achar ma'asav shehu oseh bahem. The way we work as human beings is that what we do actively, our behaviors actually influence how we feel internally. Now this goes in the complete opposite direction of what we were discussing until now in our shiurim, which is get your internals right so that you'll end up getting your externals right. And he is saying, I want to argue the complete opposite. You do something, it influences how you feel about something. You do something else, it will change how you feel in another way. Im tov, im ra. If we do good, we may feel a little good. We may think differently, in better a better way about things. If we do bad, we will be thinking and feeling in that way as well. Va'afilu rasha gamer bil vavo, v'chol yetzer machshavos libo rak ra kol hayom. And even a rasha gamer who is inside is dark and evil, and he just plots about how to kill puppies and bunny rabbits all day, for example. Im yara rucho v'yasim hishtadluso v'asko v'hasmada v'torah v'mitzos. If he decides, I need to fix this even though I hate life, I'm just going to try doing lots of Torah and mitzvot, even though I have no desire. Va'afilu shelo l'shem shemayim, and even if it's not with the right intentions, miyad yinatel atov. It is impossible that that won't influence his core being to be more of a good person. He will not remain evil. It won't happen. U'bekoach ma'asav yamis hayetzer hara, and his actions will actually, in turn, defeat his desire to do evil on the inside. Ki acharei ha-pu'ulos nimshachin ha-levavos, which is a famous phrase you may have heard before. Here is the source. Our actions are what pull our desires. We often think, I need to want it first and then I'll do it. But more often than not, it's when we involve ourselves in something, we end up becoming more attached to it. The best example of this is the L word. Love. We often think you get to know someone, you work it out on the inside, you date someone, you sit with them, you talk with them, that will enable you to love them more. That is how you build a relationship. It is not true, sorry. Spoiler alert. That may help a little bit. I'm not going to say it doesn't do anything. But the way that you build a relationship is through actions. You do something. You sacrifice. You get an extra job so that you could buy a present. You give the present. That will do a whole lot. Guys, remember that. You invest your time in something. You will learn to be invested yourself in that thing. My favorite example more than that is childbirth. How did God create this whole crazy thing? Is that a little child who we, until only recently, never ever even saw until they showed up in the world. Now you have like a 4D image. I didn't even know there were 4Ds. You could see a 4D image of a child before they're even born. I've seen it. It's crazy. At the right time. I don't know what it is. It's called a 4D imaging thing. I know that. I saw it on the thing. I don't wanna go into it, but anyways, it's not so. And this baby, all it does is make a pregnant woman more bloated and hormonal and want to eat weird things at weird times and make very poor decisions. And then eventually the climax of all of this is unimaginable pain and even more hormonal stuff we won't go into. And then a baby comes out, which is the source of all of this craziness. Sorry for the ladies in the room. And this baby comes out and you look
sympathy.
At it. Wait, I'm going to get to the good part. And this baby comes out and you look at it and you're like, this is all your fault. All of this is because you had to come into this world. And by the way, this is only the beginning. Then they start like barfing on you and breaking your valuable things and laughing about it. It's like they just came to mock your existence. There's a lot of great memories involved also, by the way. And yet that doesn't happen. The baby comes out and the mother temporarily forgets everything that just happened and says, right? As if nothing ever mattered that of all of this. And it's because for 9 months, she was literally investing her physical existence into this person. She had no choice but to literally give some of her digested food to this kid to create a home inside of the middle of her body for another person to grow. And by the time they first look at each other for the very first time, this is not the first time that they've met. She's already given most of a year of her life to this person. You can't possibly love someone that you're just meeting for the first time, and yet there is undeniable love there, and it's because of the actions, the behavior of this mom for 9 months of literally housing and feeding and doing everything that was needed for this baby. That is how actions influence emotions and feelings. And when we do something, it changes us. When we act with clarity and purpose, it gives us more clarity. And it allows us to continue that. There's the famous concept of mitzvah, goreret, mitzvah. How does that work exactly? Only through this concept. When I act, it changes who I am a tiny bit, and it says, let's do that more. Let's do that again. And what's scary is that whatever that was, if that's bad, it also says, let's do that again. The way we work is we do more of what we've already been doing. Now, the concept of mitzvah is incredibly important in this context. That's source number five. Source number five is a famous story, I'm going to say outside, but a story you may have heard of in your life. I think one of my kids came home with it this year when they were learning about Kibbud Av Ve'Em. The story of Dama ben Nesina. Have you heard of him? Dama ben Nesina was a non-Jew, one of the best non-Jewish supporting actors in the Talmud. Dama ben Nesina had a special stone in his possession, and it was a stone that the Kohanim needed to complete the outfit of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohanim came to Dama ben Nesina's house and said, we'd like to pay you a nice amount of money for that stone. Dama ben Nesina says, ooh, payday. Goes into his dad's house, his dad's room, and he sees that the stone is lying under the pillow of his father, who is fast asleep. Dama ben Nesina came outside. You remember this story? I'll complete it just to make sure. Dama ben Nesina comes outside and says, sorry, can't do the sale. And they're like, what are you talking about? He said, it's under the pillow of my sleeping dad. I can't wake him up. Keep it up, vain. Now, he's not Jewish. It's just he feels the obligation to honor his father. Kohanim said, I will double the price. He said, no dice. We're not making a sale today. They said, triple? Come on. They were waving the shekels, I don't know, in front of him. And he said, no sale, go home, guys. And the Gemara finishes by saying, in the schus of this act of kibbud av ve'em by a non-Jew, next year, he got a par aduma, a red cow, was born to him, which are much more valuable than any stone because they're nowhere to be found anywhere, and he got a much larger amount of money for that red cow. And the end of the Gemara is, if this non-Jew who was not commanded to do Kibbud Av Ve'Em did it, and it was such an amazing thing that he did it, and look how much reward he got for it, al achas kama v'kama, how much more so for those that are commanded to do Kibbud Av Ve'Em. And from that story and that concept comes the famous phrase, which is often not understood too well, which is, De Amar Rabbi Chanina, I believe, Gadol Metzuva Ve'osa Mimisha Eino Metzuva Ve'osa. It is greater to do something that you were commanded to do rather than to do something you were not commanded to do. Why is this not understood always? What's the problem with this concept?
Some people think it's opposite, that if I'm doing it from Yos Matira, I'm doing it just because I want to, then it's sometimes...
Right. When we do something because we're forced to do it, it's not so clear if it was our true intention of doing it or not. And therefore, how could we take the credit for it the same way that someone that said, I'm going to voluntarily do that thing because I feel it is right to do, and no one is making me do it, but I'm going to do it myself. Even as we're saying it right now, we're saying, wait, that's a really good argument. Why is this concept true? I want to argue that this concept is true because of Zrizus. When you are commanded to do something, you have no choice. Do you know what you do when you have no choice? You just do it. Do you know what that's awfully similar to? When you have complete clarity on something, that there is no other option. It's almost like, or actually identical to, when you had lots of choices and you chose one of them. Except here, someone did the deciding for you. Do this. Don't choose the other ones. Do this. Someone who acts based on not having that choice will act with much more clarity, with much more speed and preciseness and purpose than someone who is walking along saying, what if I chose plan B instead? And even though they're doing it out of their own goodwill, the quality of that action will not compare to someone who had no choice and is doing it directly without questioning at all. That is the power of a mitzvah. This is a shir on its own, but to understand why God made the entire realm of Avodas Hashem in the context of commandments that you have to do it is perhaps because he wanted to give us this clarity of this is what's good for us in our life. And if you combine that with the idea of the Sefer HaChinuch of if you do it enough times, it will change you, and it will refine you, and it will improve you, then actually God was setting up a formula where it doesn't matter who you are, where you came from, if you're pure evil, if you hate bunnies, if you follow this instruction, 613 of them, you will be a perfect person. It will happen, and it will be because of you, because you did it. That is the concept of Gadol Metzuva Va'osa, of choice. There's actually a cool TED Talk, Google it on YouTube, only with clarity and purpose though, of a TED Talk of a guy talking about choices. And he explains that they did research, and studies show that if you have, I think, five choices, then it's really good for you, because it enables you to analyze what's good, what's not good, and compare, and then arrive at the best possible choice. More than that is bad for you. So when you go to a supermarket and there are 11 different types of ketchup, bad. If there was only Heinz, hopefully, good. Even if there are other ones. If there are other ones in another store. But you have one and you do it. The choices actually create a more confusing situation for our human mind to take in and to make a proper choice. And we end up not making a good choice as a result, because we don't analyze it properly, we take in too much, and then any decision we make as a result will lack clarity. The idea of Zrizus being a catalyst for change is all based on the idea that we know what we're supposed to be doing. What is the concept of exile? The concept of exile is I don't have clarity. Let me explain with the last few minutes that we have of this year. Source number 7 is the story of Migdal Bavel, when all of the people after the Mabul decided to build a tower and fight against God. Vayered Hashem l'ra'osa sa'ir v'yasad migdalash urbanu b'nei adam. God went down to see it. Vayomer Hashem hein am echad v'safa achas l'kulam v'zeh hachilam la'asos v'ata lo yivatzer me'em kol asher yizmu la'asos. Right. Now they're all one language, one purpose, and now I won't let them do what they wanted. What does the Midrash say on the word and now? Va'ata, a weird thing, I would not have assumed this. Amar Rav Abba Bar Kahana Malamed Shepesach Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Pesach L'tshuva. How do we know that? Va'ata, Ein Ata Ela Tshuva. Through the word Ata, now, in this Pasuk, the Midrash claims that God at that point said, I'll give you a chance to do tshuva here. And the word that symbolizes tshuva is the word now. Kind of an interesting association. Now equals tshuva, equals change. Well, now has everything to do about Zrizus. Now means closing the gap between what I feel I should be doing and doing it.
They had Zrizus.
The answer is now.
They had Zrizus.
They had Zrizus in the wrong intention. Correct. And he even pointed it out. But he's saying, I'm going to give you a chance to do tshuva and come back the right way. But what I'm pointing out is in the Medrash, the word that was chosen to symbolize tshuva, change, repentance, is the word now. What does now have to do with tshuva? But according to the idea of Zrizus being something that allows us to directly connect to our purpose in life, it shouldn't be that much of a question. Because now is exactly what tshuva is all about. Saying, if I know what is right now, then let me be involved right now in the solution. And let's not delay. And I don't mean in terms of speed, but in terms of clarity of what I should be doing. We see in source number 9, I'm only going to speak out loud off the page about it, that in Sefer Dvarim, there's a lot of talk, which we just started this past week, and this is actually going to be in next week's Parsha, in Dvarim Perek Dalam Veschanan. Moshe says, Einechem haroz asa Hashem b'val pa'or, ki kol ish asher alacha chari b'val pa'or. Your eyes saw what Hashem did to the people who bow down to b'val pa'or. Two psukim later, Re'e lamanati eschem chukim u'mishpatim. See for yourself, I taught you these mitzvos. A few psukim later, tes, Raki shemer lecha u'shmor nafshecha me'od pen tishkach es hadvar mesher ra'u einecha. Don't forget what you yourself saw with your own eyes at Har Sinai. The concept exists in halacha that a witness who says, I saw the murder, will always defeat a witness who said, I heard something else. Seeing is always a clearer understanding of something than hearing. Seeing is actually the clearest form of knowing that something exists. I will believe it when I
see it.
Got it. Nailed it. Seeing is the essence of clarity. Seeing means I know it's there. I saw it. I know it's there. Which is often what my daughter says when there was a little bug in her room. I'm not sleeping tonight. I know it's here. I saw it. Seeing now, this is the idea of clarity. What do we say when we're in exile? What's the number one Billboard number one hit song of exile? No? I didn't do that well? Lashon Haba. Well done. Lashon Haba. What is that song about? It's also the theme song for all Mets fans everywhere. Next year. And Cubs. We'll look for the Cubs. But maybe this year. Lashon Haba. Next year in Jerusalem. After every, actually not every, but many important events during the year, specifically Yom Kippur and Pesach, we have a minhag of singing Lashon Haba v'Yerushalayim. There's also the minhag of girls who graduated senior year the summer before going to seminary. There's a lot of singing about that. Lashon Haba v'Yerushalayim. Next year. Exile is all about not now. Next. Next year.
Of course.
Think about that concept as a value. What does exile mean? Exile means I can't do something now. We don't have the ability to do what we want now. We have clarity of what we should be doing now, and we don't have opportunity to do it. That is exile. Exile is being ripped away from the midah of zrizus, of being able to do something directly as a result of knowing that I should be doing it. We can't see it. It's not here. The whole concept of galus shechina, of the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed, is that God removed himself from being visible, from being present. Back in the Bais Rishon, there was an Aron. There was Nevuah. People knew that God was there. You walked into the Beis HaMikdash, you saw miracles. Non-Jew, Jew, it doesn't matter. You saw things that you couldn't unsee. You knew that God was real. What does it mean that the Beis HaMikdash isn't here? It means one thing and one thing alone. There is no clarity in the world. It means everything is a bit hazy and confusing, and there is not one thing that I could say I know for sure. That's what we're mourning. That's why we sit and we're at a loss. We don't know what to say. It's strangely appropriate if you think about it. I don't quite know how to feel or what to say this entire day, because I'm confused. I have no clarity. It's a strange correlation between the actual exile that happened as a result of the Beis HaMikdash of God removing his presence, and the fact that we are so far removed from that time that we don't have clarity on what it even was that we lost. And probably the clearest feeling that we have on Tisha B'Av is confusion. I know one thing on Tisha B'Av, I'm confused. I mentioned in the first year, and with this I'll end, that we have this strange minhag of in the middle of the day on Tisha B'Av. Strangely, when, historically speaking, the tragedy only got worse, we get up. The middle of the day happens, we stand up, we're able to sit on chairs, we're able to watch Holocaust movies, we're able to do more, we're able to talk more, it's a little lighter. We start doing the countdown. There's some macaroni and cheese or something like that going on in the kitchen, right? And it's a strange thing because it didn't get better, it got worse, and nothing changed. And what I mentioned back then in the first year was, we're not meant to be defined by the tragedy. We're meant to understand it and connect to it, and then say, I will not be defined by it. I will look forward and say, what I can do is be different moving forward. What I can do is not drown in my past, but create a future that's different. The only way to do that is to embrace the concept of standing up and moving. And maybe, just maybe, there is no better example of the concept of Zrizus than the moment it hits Chatzos on Tisha B'Av. In the entire year, there's perhaps no better example of saying, my life changes now. Tragedy is at its very darkest now, and it's not even getting better yet, but my response is, I change. I go and I act, and that is my solution to that problem. We have a Churban HaBayis that affects our entire nation and affects the world. We also have small examples of Churban in our own life, each of us in our own way, that gets us even more confused, that might tell us to sit down and stop and just shut down. And it's appropriate to do that for half the time as a part one of our response to when we deal with a challenging situation or a tragic situation or one where we're just simply at a loss. But we can't forget the part two, which is Zrizus. Which is, if I know that I need to be different, if I know what I want If it's clear to me, even if I have other choices, but I know this one is what I want, then I need to get up now and do it. That is the best thing that could be, that could resolve my confusion, and it will influence me to be more clear in the future. May we be zocha to not have to think about any of this, because there's still a couple days before Tisha B'Av, so there's still a chance tapping into the Mets and the Cubs again, Lahavdil. There's still a chance, and it could happen tonight. And true story, Barry texted me this morning and said, "Is there anything you need for tonight?" And I said, "Mashiach wouldn't hurt, so that would be a good thing that I could have. It would make my shiur a lot easier."
Or not happen.
Shiur's canceled. Everyone hop on an eagle and hop on your nearest eagle and go to the temple. Grab a brick. Let's build. There's still a chance that all of this will be irrelevant, except for the good parts. And that's what I'm really hoping. And the very tragic possibility that that's not the case, this is our opportunity to say, okay, next year, L'shana Hava Yerushalayim, but starting now, at Chatzos of today, on Tisha B'Av, is when I see to it that next year we're in Yerushalayim. And I don't live a life of L'shana Hava, I live a life of Va'ata, of now. Of now is the time. And may we be zocha to, together, be a part of that solution in our own lives, Befrat, and the lives of everyone around us in the whole world, Bechlal, in the world of Rav Shlomo, let it be tomorrow, let it be today. Kenny Ratzon.
Thank you, Rabbi Yablok, for coming. We'll do Mara in 2 minutes, and everyone's welcome to stay.